Hello, it's me, Sir Keir Starmer, and I'm very excited to announce that the hotline has blinked in the Labour Party offices this week, and I can confirm that Canadian hip-hop impresario Drake has defected to the Labour Party. As someone who's long been a fan of Canadian hip-hop-style rap, and also old episodes of Degrassi, which I watch with Angela Rayner on a regular basis, I'm very proud to welcome him over to the Labour Party, and I know that he's been subject to some criticisms recently, but I'm sure he's going to be vital in our plan to reach out to younger voters. And so now I would like to ask Mr. Drake to help me with my own diss track against Rishi Sunak. Rishi, why is our public infrastructure so underinvested? From sensible social programs you've divested. You should reorganise our finances, they're in disarray. I welcome what the Prime Minister has done, but I would request that he go further with sound investment decisions in a sensible way.
At the end of the next election, some fear the number of Labour MPs may reach as high as 1738.
That's right.
And the number of Tory MPs might drop as low as 6. Hi, everybody. It's TF. It is. Milo is returned. Well, Keir Starmer briefly was here.
Yeah, he had to go.
Uh-huh, yeah. And Milo's back now.
I am, I'm back. I'm back on this side of the world, which is nice.
Yeah, Milo and Edwards, the close side of the world. How about that one?
There we go.
How about that one for you?
Podcasts are now battlefield. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, being away for a long time really makes you realize is, you know, Australia is nice. However, I have like a routine when I'm here and I have so many things to do each week. What I've realized is that the only way I can do that is with like a large amount of autopilot, just by there are certain times and days where I'm in certain places and I do certain things. Mm. And if I'm on the other side of the world, my brain collapses because I have to remember all of that stuff manually. And it makes you realize just how fallible the human psyche really is.
There's a little sort of like box in your psyche when you're setting out to do something. It's like, are you in Australia at this moment? And once that's ticked, you're like, fucked.
That's right. Yeah. You just go into snag mode.
Now that Andy Rooney has come and gone as well, I want to get into our episode. We're going to talk a little bit about the local elections. We're going to talk about the ongoing response or non-response or whatever you want to call it to the local elections, the political environment more generally, that is continuing the transformation, it seems, just MP by MP of the Labour Party into the Conservative Party.
Yeah, into a kind of retirement home for Tory MPs fleeing that sinking ship.
Yeah, they're doing island hop.
Yeah, look.
I mean, this is the thing. This is a niche we could carve out for ourselves, because obviously, like, some in the Labour Party don't want frothing right-wing Tory MPs in the Labour Party. Mm. But they have to go somewhere, right? And so I propose Trash Future, SPAC, Oil Warehouse, Hedge Fund also become a political party solely for the purpose of giving us a caucus in Parliament while all of these freaks serve out the rest of their term.
Oh, wait, are you saying that we could be like a kind of warehouse storage for like end of career frothing right wing?
Well, they're just like nailed into boxes and then like lifted up onto big shelves.
Exactly. Yeah. Like Sakir, on your way out, let me just pitch this to you. This is a service we can offer you. If you let Tory MPs defect to us instead of to you, you will hear nothing from them because we will be silencing them. It will be a cash for no questions affair.
What's what you're proposing? You're basically proposing like tax loss harvesting.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Now, I also want to, and then we're going to talk a little bit, of course, about the, we talked about how the sort of wave of campus protests in the US was going to move to the UK, and there have been predictably UK responses to that. And then we're going to have a little bit of fun with something I've got planned for us at the end. But first, I just need to like, I know that we poisoned ourselves with electoralism in 2019.
We did.
And then we let ourselves get like hopeful again. Mm-hmm. But we cannot rely on electoralism again because Brian Rose lost the London mayor election.
I know.
It was rigged.
It's brutal.
Yeah,
this is the thing. It's like Russia. They fear real opposition. Mm. And so you have to have controlled opposition like Susan Hall or the Britain First guy or Count Binface, all of whom outpolled Brian Rose in the biggest electoral injustice in this nation's history.
You know it was rigged because the following day when Sadiq won, he was on the Evening Standard wearing a suit, wearing a green linen suit. And I can only read that as like a dig at Brian Rose, the only man who knows how to wear a suit in a way that Derek the suit guy just cannot comprehend.
Yeah, he like, as a humiliation thing, he beat him and then he stole his thing of wearing a suit in an interesting way.
They are doing this to demoralize you.
Part of the resistance inside the Sadiq Khan administration.
He knows that Brian Rose hates the Riddler. And so it was a particular...
I can't wait.
Brian Rose is like, I tolerate the Joker. He seems like he might drink his own piss. But the Riddler and his ridiculous puzzles, I care not for that man.
Which is weird because the Riddler is the most crypto-pilled Batman villain by a country mile.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
So no, we are now entering the glorious third term of the thousand-year Khan 8, I'm calling it.
Unquestioned, moderate, slightly disappointing center-left policies.
Yeah, like just riding in like at the head of a column of horsemen, erecting a giant Kurgan where City Hall used to be.
But they tried that with the mound, right? That was a dry run.
That was Khan's Kurgan. We're ready to impose 1,000 years of like a 2p tax on motorists or whatever.
Well, that was why people feared, you know, on the Eurasian steppe, feared the Khan so much. It was the ULEZ policy. It really fucked with all of their ox.
No. Every car owner is now going to have to install a mandatory car bomb in their vehicle. Council employees are allowed to key any vehicle that they see. And Jeremy Vine has been given 007 legal kill status for any motorist he runs across.
Yeah. You actually have to genuflect the guy who cycles around with his cat in the front basket of his bike now. Yeah. Like, that's obliged. He, like, you owe him a salute as he goes past.
We should also say that Jeremy Vine, aside from being this nation's greatest living broadcaster, is now also this nation's greatest living video editor. I never see a Jeremy Vine video where I'm not like, the edit on this is crazy. I don't know whether he's doing it himself or whether he has like a Zoomer doing it, but like the dramatic like smash cuts, the text, it's got a deep aesthetic.
Jeremy Vine's like Zoomer hype beast video editor nephew or something.
So what actually happened, right, with the London election is, I think the Tories just have assumed that they're never going to be able, like, to win a like London mayoral election again. Mm. Like the same thing with New York. The Republicans are like, yeah, we're just never winning.
Which is
here.
Weird because they could, if anyone wanted the job, who could get elected? Yeah. Like, this is the thing. It's a poison chalice for any conservative since Boris, right? And the only person, like the only Tory person they want to do it is Karen Brady off The Apprentice, and she doesn't want to do it for any number of personal reasons. So they keep throwing nobodies like Susan Hall at it and going, okay, when will the fascist coalition of like anti-ULEZ guys build itself together under her?
Under like a kind of wacky aunt from Harrow.
They need to run Captain Gatzer. It's the only solution.
Actually, that's not a bad idea, because the sort of way that I saw it was like, well, one way is kind of, you could, like, the Tories could sort of win London again if they could find someone who could, like, at least pretend that they liked being in London. I think Boris was sort of, like, kind of, I was pretty young and, like, sort of disinterested when he got elected, so I can't really remember, like, what the campaign was. But he strikes me as a guy who wouldn't, like, his campaign wouldn't be, like, yeah, this place fucking sucks and I hate it, and, like...
Yeah, Boris's campaigns were more like, he's funny, check out this funny guy. He says the, you know, whiff waff.
But the reason why I was thinking, and like there was that period of time just before the election where, and obviously we know that it was kind of bullshit and like, you know, political journalists sort of just like took the bait. But one of the things that I and lots of other people were sort of thinking was, oh, like Susan Hall could potentially win it. And the reason why she could potentially win it would be because I think there is like a greater sort of disparity between Greater London and the inner cities in terms of, and inner London in terms of like what it's kind of like politics actually are. And so if you had someone who was like a bit more politically astute, who could sort of take the anger and take the kind of like politics of resentment, but I think is sort of very ubiquitous in lots of external London, and like having lived exclusively in between like zones 5 and 7 most of my life, like it is very evident.
You're so right. Like, the city is poised for Bromley Hitler. Like, it's only a matter of time before someone from one of the bits of London that is technically in London but shouldn't really be is, like, Leeds.
Ruling London from the Glade Shopping Centre. Holding a rally at the Chislehurst Caves. The echo you'd get on that.
You needed someone who would basically be able to kind of, like form an army of ULEZ-driven, like, anger at ULEZ-driven car bombers to, like, you know, just Matt, like, kind of like really drive this campaign, and Susan Hall was not that. So all of which is to say that, like, with kind of tactic that the Tories in, like, you know, the tact. I mean, again, I feel like it sort of sparks back to the idea that they'd never thought that this woman would win. And then, like, on the off chance that, like, oh, she might, you know, they sort of, like, quickly change their tune. But if you had someone who could just, like, really contain that energy, like a Farage type figure, like, it could have gone a very, very different way. And I don't know what, I don't know what's going to happen in, like, the next term, but, like, I wouldn't necessarily write off that kind of politics becoming a lot more dominant in Conservative Party stuff.
Touching my hand to the lathe here, Nigel Farage is from London, right? Like, he went to school in Dulwich. Like, he could be Bromley Hitler if he wanted to be. It's just, like, it would be a demotion from the kind of Hitler job he's, like, auditioning for now.
Or at least Orpington Mussolini.
No, but that's a great restaurant.
The thing is, like, elections in the UK, I think having sort of sat through quite a few of them, being sort of invested in, you know, a couple of them. Elections in the UK have for a very long time largely been about dissatisfaction with incumbency.
Yeah, well, this is interesting because this election has been a kind of blueprint of boring versus boring, right? And the Khan campaign was no one sees him, no one talks to him, you forget he's there, enough people vote out of inertia that he gets his third term, and then he comes out in his new Percival suit and celebrates.
Yeah. Not enough, and it's like all you didn't do is motivate enough people more or less against him.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It was basically how many people hate you, Les, and will remember to bother to vote.
Not
more
enough,
or less.
Basically.
And it's this, you know, you can map that, and there are a lot of political journalists have been trying to draw, again, a lot of conclusions about how to map the local elections that have just gone onto an upcoming Westminster election. And, you know, say a lot of that has been pretty spurious, right? Because you're not going to, people at Westminster elections aren't going to vote for third parties as often.
Yeah.
Also, turnout does tend to be a little bit higher than in local elections. But nevertheless, you know, there is, broadly speaking, the sort of decimation of the Tories didn't mean lots and lots of voters going to Labour. Labour won out of it, but there was a lot of, there were councillors that went over to Reform. There was also wins for the Workers' Party of Great Britain. There were also wins for the Greens, considerable, actually, like, Labour support going over to the Greens.
Yeah, chipping away in Bristol at Labour.
But moreover, I think there are a few things that will probably, there are a few things that that got germinated in these local elections that will probably stick around as national political tendencies. One of which is, it looks as though all of the, like, I don't know, like, unelected fake job people whose job it is to get, like, performatively scared of anything outside the British political mainstream are now looking squarely at the Greens. Like, we have John Mann writing them letters. We have the JLM, the Labour, like, the JLM, the Labour Party affiliated group, writing about their concern with the Greens, saying that, like,
doesn't even go here.
But they do have a lot of feelings.
And, you know, that, and so it's like, okay, well, we now know, right? Exactly. The what's going to happen with the Green Party is they're going to be, because they are where, like, the left that looks at the at sort of Starmer's Labour and says, we don't want to be involved in this at all.
The new thing that has to be policed,
yes,
right?
Like, exactly.
Because there's enough drift that, like, they're the only credible thing to police.
Yeah.
And the Labour right love policing stuff. They love it. They're crazy about it.
Yeah.
It's just going to be really funny when it's applied to the Green Party, because it's going to have to be like, you're eating lentils in an anti-Semitic way. like, there's a lot of criticisms you could level at the Green Party, but they're just so fundamentally harmless.
Saw it work already, because Corbyn was spiritually quite green. He was a lentil man. Like, you know, he was lentiled up. He was lentiled.
He was allotment maxing.
So we see, like, the sort of, like, I don't know, monstering of the Greens again, like, you know, John Mann just like getting his, like, getting Terminator vision at the Greens, and then, like,
an electoral threat, but not a huge one, like,
no.
Versus, you know, Orpington Mussolini, they're not about to become Bristol Stalin. Maybe they should do, but
do you disavow the actions of the Green Giant? Do you agree that it is violent and intimidating when he says, ho, ho, ho?
Oh, the Spanish Green Giant has some skeletons in his closet. Those tweets.
He was a Francoist.
Would you nationalize Maros?
Yeah, just, well, just yeah. The Jolly Green Giant striding into Madrid, ending the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah, that's right.
Grim times.
But we don't want to know what policies he did want to bring about.
So he wounded Hemingway.
The other thing, though, right? The other tendency I think we've seen a lot, but that has come out in quite an ugly way from these local elections, is the idea that fundamentally it is illegitimate to court, quote unquote, capitals at the start of each letter, the Muslim vote.
Yeah, this is, again, groups being policed, right? This community, we insist, are like leaving the Labour Party when they shouldn't, and this is because of ancient hatred. I mean, the anonymous Labour source saying one of the most racist things I've ever heard in my life.
Wait, sorry. This after this local election, I'm going to have to ask you, which of the instances of that?
Specifically the one talking about, like, Hamas winning in the West Midlands.
I mean, to be fair, that was a great one on the board for Hamas. No one really expected that. I mean, they are kind of a single issue party, and no one was really expecting them to make such big inroads, even in the West Midlands. But, you know, fair play to the Hamas candidate. Was pretty shocked at the count.
But yeah, no, you had a bunch of, like, Labour right insiders, you know, texting journalists the most, like, repulsive, heinous shit. And then, like, having to cover for each other by being like, oh, this kind of repulsive, heinous shit wouldn't be allowed in Keir Starmer's Labour Party. And if I ever find out which Luke Akehurst did it, then he will certainly be expelled from the Labour Party. Like, it speaks to a real kind of, well, obviously the repressive tendency of the Labour right that we know about, but also the racism that we know about, but also a little bit of, like, edge of panic, right?
Yeah, Hussein, I want to bring you in on this one as well.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that the Labour Party is Islamophobic. It's like the first time I've heard about it. It's like, it's not particularly surprising, you know, and I don't really know what to say about it other than we will see more of it. It's an interesting sort of insight where, like, on the one hand, kind of, you know, very, it's not necessarily that there's like a dependency, but obviously, like, you know, for a very long time, like, Muslim votes has sort of made up part of the coalition of which, like, Labour kind of calculates its ability to win under Starmer, and also particularly, like, in relation to sort of the fallout over anti-Semitism afterwards. One of the things that I think we spoke about on this show, like, during that time, was the kind of, like, conflict that this would have with Muslim voters, partly because it's sort of, like, of the ways in which, and at the time that we were talking about this, you know, it wasn't to say that it was abstract, because, like, obviously, you know, there was still, you know, there, you know, Gaza was still there. There was still, like, surveilling and policing and, like, brutality. People, like, Gazans were still dying there. But, like, the current war was not in place. And so it was sort of treated in this very abstract way. And, you know, as we've sort of spoken about a lot, like, you know, a lot of the things that came out of that report have now just sort of been thrown into the bin by the people who were, like, and still kind of policing people and chasing them out of the Labour Party. You know, not most noticeably the idea that, like, you know, you can sort of, you know, the report still sort of says that, like, you know, you can criticize the state of Israel without, you know, being anti-Semitic. That is, like, a legitimate position to make. And what we've seen over the past few months is actually, no, that's not true. Any criticism you make of Israel is, in fact, deeply anti-Semitic. And, like, you know, you don't get to sort of defend yourself from that, right? And so, obviously, this is going to alienate people for whom, like, a kind of religious war.
Oh, interesting. Suddenly you think something does have the right to defend itself.
Well, it's just like, well, you know, you sort of also manufactured this into a religious war by the nature of, like, how you have reacted to what is going on. Of course you're going to alienate people. You're certainly, like, I don't think it should be seen as, like, a holistically, like, you know, Muslim voters are turning away from us type of thing. I think that, like, obviously voting is a lot more complicated. I don't believe that, like, the Muslim vote is a kind of, you know, holistic thing in the way that lots of media types sort of insist it is. Nevertheless, like, this is sort of an inevitable consequence, and one that, like, it is extremely frustrating to see columnists and political pundits and people who, like, have access to actual political stuff and not just, like, us doofuses, like, who just, you know, are on the show, who are kind of just pretending to be deeply oblivious to that. And this is just going to get worse. It is absolutely going to get worse. And, like, I don't know, the gambit at the moment is very much like, you know, and I think the sort of news about Labour and who it's sort of allowing into its ranks and who isn't is very much indicative of a Keir Starmer Labour Party who have sort of hinged their entire strategy on, like, getting rid of all the voters that sort of begrudgingly voted for them for decades and decades in order to sort of court the most insane Tories that you can even imagine.
Enthusiastically, shaking the fleas off was like the sort of description about it.
And we talk about like the, and I think this can be seen as I think you cannot see the shift in the color of tie that will be administering the 0 hours contracts, basically, right? You have to see these things all at once. And, you know, this, like, the great weirdening of the Tories continues apace, because the voters that they lost some to, like, Labour, they lost some to Lib Dems, they lost some to Reform, but the only focus of our political media entertainment, like, edifice that I've seen has been how, like, the Tories have to, the local elections show that the Tories have to chase the voters who are leaving to Reform, and Labour has to chase the voters that are leaving the Tories as they run to Reform. All of which means, right, like, there are two events that happened in the last few days that perfectly encapsulate this, right, beyond the local elections. Number one is as a result of, there's three actually, one of them involved in the local elections, which is that Tunbridge Wells is no longer Tory. It's a Lib Dem, it's like a Lib Dem council now.
Incredible.
Great stuff.
Yeah. For those of you not in Britain, Tunbridge Wells is probably like the spiritual center of English nationalist fascism, the genteel middle class sort of English fascism.
It's the site of, I believe, the most expensive boarding school in the UK, in fact.
It's the kind of Bayreuth to Bromley Hitler.
Yeah. It's your archetypical sort of priggish, curtain-twitching letter to the editor. It's sort of disapproving.
Disgusted in Tunbridge Wells.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's always signed disgusted of Tunbridge Wells. And they're going Lib Dem. The Tories got too weird for them. Right, but the other
just,
thing,
just like economy gets 1% too bad, I've now been reading 700 pages of decolonial gender theory.
I went to uni with a girl who lived in Tunbridge Wells, and every night she would have a phone conversation with her dog. I'm not joking. That happened.
Okay. Yeah.
She like we were having like dinner in our halls, and she was just like, "Oh, I've got to call the dog," and she came back, and I was like, Can you like say that again? She's like, yeah, I phoned my dog. It's like, because my dog misses me.
It's
sure.
And she was from Tunbridge Wells. Yeah.
It's obviously though, like as a typical sort of home counties British person, being on the phone with the dog does make it harder, because you can see the dog, but you can't physically kiss it on the mouth.
You can't even see the dog, because like, you know, this was like, we didn't have, well, I mean, like there were smartphones, but like most of us, if you were really wealthy, you had like a BlackBerry, but if you didn't,
calling
then,
so like, my dog on my Motorola Razr.
Yeah, so she was calling her dog on her BlackBerry.
The dog has like a Bluetooth headset, like one of those call center ones, like so, one earphone and a mic. Yeah.
So, in addition to Tunbridge Wells, the epicenter of like people having strange relationships with their dogs,
which is woke now. Now they're gonna have to ask their dogs pronouns.
Is the Tory defections continue, which we've alluded to. Natalie Elphick, who basically
scraped through the bottom of the barrel into the kind of sediment below the barrel.
Indeed.
Isn't she the MP for Dover?
Yes. She is.
That strikes me as just a pretty right-wing part of town.
Well, Kent has two Labour MPs, her and Rosie Duffield.
Yeah, and Rosie Duffield fucking hates it, which is really funny. Like, Rosie Duffield has been briefing against Big Keir about this. There's been, like, serious pushback from, like, her and some other Labour MPs about this. So I guess really it's kind of like Highlander. There can only be one Kent Labour MP, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be Tunbridge Wells. Yeah. So Natalie Elphick has basically crossed the aisle to the Labour Party. And
Everything's moving so far right, she woke up in the Labour Party.
Yeah.
They were like, it was like a kind of like post-World War I Central Europe where you just woke up and they were like, you're in Poland now. And you're like, what? Yeah. And they're like, start speaking Polish gun.
Yeah, Natalie Elphick has defected to Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So basically,
the Sudeten Tory.
This is more, this is the best possible like summary of it.
Bromley Hitler occupying the Bromley Sudetenland.
And, you know, again, like more, I think all that needs to be said about it is that this is someone who is a stop the boats right wing Tory for whom Rishi Sunak was too soft, and not sort of speculate. And we all know, right, that that every Labour MP's favorite MP is a Tory. Labour MP is a Tory MP.
Yeah,
right.
I said that last time, and it came even more true.
Yeah,
like, and also, do we want to talk about how she got her seat in the first place?
I think it is worth talking about how she got her seat, and also remembering. I do hate to bring this up, but it's also worth remembering that in 2019, remember how we expelled sleaze, corruption, yeah. and sort of, you graft. Might say, yeah, graft, racism, things like this mm. from British politics for good.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Take it away.
Well, so Natalie Elphick got her seat when her husband, Charlie Elphick, I want to say,
yes.
was arrested, charged, and then convicted of sexual assault. And she and a bunch of other MPs made submissions that, like, tried to improperly influence the judge in that court hearing. And her submission was, don't convict my husband of sexual assault because it's not his fault he's hot.
Yeah.
He is, like, a 10 out of 10 smoke show. He's a mm-hmm. baddie.
Yeah.
Therefore, like, it's not his mm-hmm. fault, which is insane.
And to say, and then to
and
say.
And then they made yeah. her an MP.
And then Starmer.
Wait, how do
made...
you fucking grandfather that shit in? Where that? What's? How is there a line of descent on an MP's seat to like wife after you yeah. get like mm-hmm. done for sexual misconduct?
Boris was like, he is hot. To be fair, I'd shag him.
What the fuck is this, Crusader Kings?
Yeah, right.
But yeah. but right, and not sort of. And of course, like, it is unsurprising, right, that these people are extremely right wing. It's unsurprising that they're hypocrites. But if you, I sort of pair this in my mind, right. But at the same time, a couple days ago, the package of workers' rights that was that was sort of Angela Rayner's baby,
yeah.
right? That was to be, that was one of the big promises as yet unbroken by the party. Because, yeah, you know, they broke their promises yeah, about...
Angela Rayner, like, it's worth staying in because yeah. I have this whole package of, like, labor reforms and I will never get Tonya Harding'd.
Yeah. And how essentially...
Keir stalking towards her in the car park with a tire iron.
I welcome your shins.
But it's a shame if anything were to happen to them.
Yeah, I know. Right, and at the same time, this package of reforms, I have it here, has essentially the renewed New Deal, it's now called.
The new deal.
The newer deal.
Yeah. Uh-huh, very good.
The newest possible deal we could emphasize. Yeah.
Everything is for the deal and the newest of all possible deals.
We've got the newest deal, folks.
No.
People say they've got a deal.
This is a Trump on QVC vibe. Yeah.
So, what they have done.
Beautiful brooch. Go plate it.
What they have done
yeah.
is they promised a number of things, including a new single status for all workers, effectively eliminating the gig economy. They promised.
What are they getting? Everyone's single now.
Yeah, it's going to be a horny time.
Every worker declared single and fuckable.
Yeah, that's right. Submissive and readable. Yeah,
it's hot worker summer.
Also, they declared like that you would get full employment rights from day one, so no sort of probationary periods where you could be fired without cause and so on and so on. There was to be a low pay commission who would have a statutory duty and powers to raise wages as much as possible. Things like this.
Yeah, actually, some of the really obvious abuses, like yeah. 0 hours contracts, like yeah. firing you and then immediately rehiring mm-hmm. you on worse yeah. terms. And the unions were like all for this and they were willing to stick up with a lot of like Starmer bullshit because they were going to get this through. And now...
It was like, yeah, okay, fine. We're not going to get the green
yeah,
new
yeah,
deal.
Yeah, two genders, whatever. No. Fine. Yeah. Can you do something about the 0 hours contracts?
Yeah.
And Keir Starmer was like, yes.
And then it was like, okay, we're not going to get the Green Prosperity Plan. We're not really going to meaningfully nationalize rail in any way. We're not really going to do anything about all the poo in the rivers. We're
a bunch of weird yeah. turf mm-hmm. shit also.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not in the rivers as well, is it?
Yeah. But we are at least going to like have a bunch of quite labor friendly, it's in the name, of course, mm-hmm. changes to workers' rights.
Yeah.
What has happened is all of these have been watered down to either sector specific. So, for example, the fair pay agreement in all sectors, which would see collective bargaining mandated in each different industrial sector, has been watered down to a promise to consult on a fair pay agreement in the social care sector only.
Wow.
This is nothing. Yeah. This is absolutely nothing.
It's a lot. It's a big change to go from all sectors to one sector a bit.
Yeah, that's most of the sectors you're taking out.
Yeah.
Almost all of them, in fact.
It will also, basically what they've said is they have clarified that their proposed ban on 0 hours contracts will be a right to contract reflecting a worker's regular work pattern over the previous 12 weeks. Essentially, all of these things are leaving so much wiggle room that anyone who is currently powerful, say an employer, for example...
Just wiggle your way right through that.
Yeah, you just don't have to do it. You won't have to do any of it.
Yeah, and so the union's response to this, to exercise their, you know, fairly substantial financial lever on Keir Starmer, because they still fund the Labour Party to a great extent, has been to be like, frowny face.
Yeah.
We will have a come to Jesus meeting with Keir Starmer.
Yes.
Which has not happened yet, I believe.
No.
Keir Starmer's just constantly going around to every single power broker in the UK and going, do you hate me?
Are you mad at me?
Are you mad at me? Can I do something?
And the thing is, all of these like Labour people are mad at him, but they're also like so broken by like years of like Labour and Tory governance that they're just like their only red lines are frowny face.
Mm.
So, like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll surprise me. But, like, I'm not optimistic about how this is going to go.
If Keir Starmer's not careful, the Trade Union Congress are going to send him that emoji of, like, the warthog with his head exploding. And then he'll really be in trouble.
So, what we have is you have the same kind, broadly speaking, the same kinds of rights for people who are already in, like, permanent jobs. And the more close it, the higher up the scale it is, obviously, the better. You have that already.
I welcome the shrinking of the fence, but I call upon it to go further.
What you also have then is pretty much no route out of casualized work, no route out of precarious work. It's the same kind of like, if you want to know, like, there's been lots of sort of, you know, ink spilled about what is Starmerism, what is Starmerism. I mean, I'm ongoing with my view that it is a media management project, and it had an idea of, what do we think the papers and the press want to hear? Well, we're the Labour Party, so it should probably be some investment. People kind of liked that. And then there was sort of pressures and pressures and pressures, and people didn't like it all. And it's been slowly whittled down to, I will kind of just tell you whatever you want, until eventually the plan seems to be to have all seats under one party rule, because everybody just joins the Labour Party, and it more or less continues the glorious project of Cameronism.
It's beautiful, isn't it? It's a managed democracy. We're going to be like the LDP in Japan. Like, red tie. That's the sole policy left, is red tie. Uh-huh. Unless you don't like it, in which case, blue tie.
Yeah. Rishi Sunak should join the Labour Party. And
it's
become
a matter
leader.
Of time.
Yeah. He could stay on as Prime Minister. He'll just convince Keir Starmer into letting him be leader.
Welcome, Rishi Sunak, new member for North Yorkshire, you know?
So what is, ultimately, right, it's not worthwhile asking what's the difference, because there is no difference. It's just interesting to note that what is actually happening is everybody seemed to agree that the main problem of David Cameron was the Brexit referendum. And then that kind of threw things for a loop for a little while, as well as like the Labour Party accidentally becoming a much more, if not, again, having much more popular policies. Those things all happened for a while.
Yeah,
we've reset,
like,
though.
Brexit aberration to the right, Corbyn aberration to the left. We recenter back to Cameron and Osborne, I guess. Like, we've gone from the guy who fucked the pig's head to a guy who looks like the pig's head that got fucked. But, like, the policies remain basically the same. The sentiment is slightly nastier in some ways.
It's like Cameronism will never stop, right? Cameronism, it's like the T-2000. You know, you can be.
Our
can
goal
stop
is the
it.
Unhappiness of all mankind.
Cameron Gilles, Cameron Gilles, Cameron Boudicic.
It's like Cameronism can never be stopped. It can be slowed down.
Is the thing is, true Cameronism has never been tried.
Yeah, that's all right.
Look, maybe we just didn't hug enough hoodies. So it's like it's just 2015 again. And we're just going to pick up as though the last like 8 years more or less didn't happen.
It was all a dream.
Yeah. Well, I put it to you that it didn't happen.
Mm.
Look, a lot of people have been criticizing the Labour Party, saying, what exactly are you offering? Whereas I think we've very carefully threaded the needle. We have a lot of stakeholders that we must take into account for the benefit of people in business and the media. I am actually doing nothing. But for the benefit of voters, I am appearing to do something. Whilst actually doing nothing. And that's actually quite difficult.
I think not even it's accurate to say doing nothing. Doing quite a bit of very aggressive activity, but that's homeostatic.
Mm.
It's like he's doing quite a bit just to make sure that nothing changes. Or if it changes, that it gets worse for the people it's supposed to get worse for and better for the people it's supposed to.
You see the thing in The Guardian about interviewing a bunch of climate scientists who are like, oh yeah, we're fucked. We're like mega fucked.
Yeah.
So it's cool. We're gonna go back to 2015, but with like the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere like way higher.
It's gonna make everyone stupider. Yeah,
so what we're saying is the politics of 2015, the climate of the Paleocene.
Yes.
Great. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, I think that the politics of 2015 is a perfect way to react to a Pangea climate. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Well, someone tell Keir Starmer not to eat any bacon sandwiches or he could be in real trouble.
If anyone who's going to say, oh, Pangea wasn't the Paleocene, that was just the first like geological epoch I could think of. Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
But look, this is ultimately, I think, what we learn is from the council elections, what we learn from the ongoing, like, you know, shite festing or whatever you want to call it, that has been going on in basically the one political party that runs Britain,
yeah,
is that these things are going to continue defending themselves, and they're defending themselves most probably, if you're listening to this, from you.
Yes, absolutely.
Basically.
Okay. Not necessarily the you that exists now, unless you're in the Green Party, but like the you that could exist, the angrier you, the cooler you, the you that throws Molotov cocktails at things, that kind of you. Of which, one of those climate scientists the Guardian interviewed was like, yeah, I give it 5 years before there's like serious like state, like civil disorder, like worldwide. So, you know.
And so the when we talk about Starmer not doing anything, what he's doing is he's gearing up to defend the current order as much as possible from disorder, which doesn't include, by the way that you might want it to be. You might want to be defended from disorder, which is you would want to be kept so comfortable you don't become disorderly.
No, no, that's not possible anymore. We've blazed right past.
No, no. Repression.
It's actually quite prescient, right? Because it's so much of the labor rights idea of policing stuff is, you know, it's freakish, obviously, in personal terms to be like, to even like frown at me as disorderly, right? But if you want to suppress like the disorder that's going to be happening in 5 years' time, it's pretty smart.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of disorder, how about some disorder that's happening now?
Ooh. Yeah, that's disorder of pasta coming directly to my... I don't
know. So, you're eating it all to Mussolini, I see.
It is indeed, as we talked about in our episode with Victoria. By the way, if you're wondering, these episodes, if you remember, are recorded a few days in advance.
Yeah, this if the disorder has already happened, if society has collapsed, we recorded this right before it did.
Yeah, if Orpington Mussolini has been cancelled, we're sorry, we didn't know.
Yeah.
Orpington Mussolini makes the night buses run on time.
Yeah, that's right.
So, look, is that as we record this now, the sort of ongoing student protests against atrocities and crimes against humanity being committed in Gaza, and specifically their university's involvement in them through investment has now sort of started to take off in the UK, with early victories being won at Goldsmiths, who I believe, so they have, and again, I welcome being corrected here, they actually did achieve divestment, which is the most important aim,
absolutely.
As well as some other goals, which is scholarships for Palestinian students, and then sort of some, changing some like protest guidelines and so on and so on. That's like the divestment thing's the most important thing.
Similarly, shout out to Irish students, University College Dublin. They occupied their library for 5 days, I think. And the university took the correct approach, which was do nothing and then give them everything they want.
Yes.
This is the thing, right? If you are a university administrator and you
never had this many students in the library, what's going on?
If you're interested in like maintaining a sort of like well-administered university, one of the best things you can do is unconditional surrender.
Yeah.
Give the students everything they want, because what they did was they like went, yeah, we will absolutely divest from like all of our investments that relate to Israel at all, and we will give the students everything they want. And everyone went home, and now you can use the library again.
Yeah. No.
But you won't, because you're an undergraduate student.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's
UCD, so it's full of tourists anyway.
There have also been other encampments that have been set up at other London universities, which are some of the earlier ones, and now at universities around the country. Oxford and Cambridge are, of course, meriting outsized coverage because...
I got an email from Cambridge University about the protest there from the Vice Chancellor.
Why? Why'd you get that email?
It was the most... I don't know. I must be on some kind of email list. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. And it was like the most hilariously corporate email I think I've ever received. It was like, we are aware of the protest on King's College lawn. We encourage everyone to be respectful of one another. We are aware that there are harsh feelings on both sides.
Are they actually mad because all the students are like camping out on the lawn and you're not allowed to do that unless you have a PhD?
Yeah.
Not unless you're a fellow.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is the thing. One thing I will say for the average British university administrator is, unlike the average American university administrator, they don't have a full-time police force with riot gear just under their own personal discretion. And thank Christ for
that. They just have guys with bikes.
Yeah.
Being like, can you not do that?
You're being encircled by like 50 guys with bikes.
Yeah, like... The worst thing that Indiana University can do is have you shot by snipers. The worst thing that Cambridge University can do is fine you 6 bottles of port for some reason.
But nevertheless, right, these sort of the encampments that have popped up in these universities and these sort of early victories that are being won at Goldsmiths has led to, I would say, a full scale media and government panic, as Rishi Sunak has called all, like, summoned the ambassadors from the universities to number 10, basically saying, here's what we're all going to agree on, okay? Except he said it in his little, you know, little guy voice.
Here's what we can all agree on.
What?
Keir Starmer.
Oh, well, sorry.
Because you joined the Labour Party. Yeah, instead of talking Keir Starmer.
Guys. Yeah, Rishi Sunak standing on the chair.
Uh-huh. Standing backwards on a chair.
Really, really thrilled by the idea that when you defect to Labour, you have to start talking a bit like Keir Starmer.
Yeah, and for Rishi Sunak, it's a short journey.
Well, every journey for him is a short journey.
Yeah, that's right.
But
actually, it's proportionately a very long journey when compared to. It's like if you imagine how far walking across a tabletop is to an ant. That's like walking to the tube station for Rishi Sunak is like a day's journey.
So why is to fly everywhere?
He has to take like a little snack.
So he has basically called the ambassadors from the summoned the ambassadors like a diplomatic incident for all the universities, basically saying, "All right, here's what we're all going to agree on. We're all going to agree, right, that we don't want." The protest, this is his words, campus protests that could escalate to the sorts of scenes witnessed in the U.S. where pro-Palestinian protests at Ivy League universities turned violent. That is the framing.
Violence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the framing that is being adopted by the government and anyone in the press who is writing about this. Remember, when we last talked about it, they have been absolutely gagging for the protest, for the same protest to come over here because the Tories, the establishment media, whoever you want to talk about, has not had a chance to cheerlead basically like the busting of student heads for about 12 years.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny because it just completely misunderstands how anything works in the UK as well. Like, as in, the reason why those protests escalated to violence in America is because America is insane and it has an insane political culture and loads of insane people turned up and were like, what if we hit the protesters in a way that just doesn't really happen in the UK?
Again, like, no university cops either. Like,
well, I think there are a lot of the insane people who turned up at the protests in the US were largely police. The insane people who would turn up at the protests in the UK are like, again, like internet poisoned or like, you know, Daily Mail poisoned lunatics who are going to, like someone already did in the US at a Columbia protest, drive their car into a bunch of people.
Or like the UCLA counter protesters and maybe air quotes.
Yeah, those were the ones I was hearing a lot about were kind of like slightly crazy pro-Israel people like turning up and doing insane.
The Sunak then said, "Our university campuses should be places of rigorous debate, but don't cancel any of the... Don't cancel graduation. Don't cancel commencement. No one should be inconvenienced on their way... On the Pitt Rivers Museum? No one should be inconvenienced on their way into the Pitt Rivers Museum."
Yeah, they're trying to see the shrunken heads.
Well, I come back to University College Dublin for some reason, which is that, like, if the ideal bourgeois university has no students and no teaching happening, one thing it does have besides administrators and cops is a lot of tourists for some reason. So, Oxford and Cambridge can both just be tourist attractions now.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Gillian Keegan, Education Secretary, said that many of them need an increased police presence on campuses after some were slow to react to the problem. So, the idea here is many things.
No police left.
We want to chase America and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. We looked at, or at least our political culture.
We want to be in the culture war so bad.
Yeah, but they don't want to be, just don't want to be in the culture war. They want there's a desperate desire to have those atavistic, angry anger. Sorry, I'll take that again. There's a desperate desire to have that atavistic anger taken out on against people you don't like, you find scary, or you find somehow both intimidating and pathetic at the same time.
You look at the demographics of this and it's mostly like your own children or grandchildren.
Yes, correct.
But also that even though we also have no cops left, crucially, Rishi Sunak doesn't have the American cop to draw on. He doesn't have, like, the Punisher decal guy. Because the British cop, what they would do if you sent them down to the protest would be, like, have a lot of very circumlocutory conversations with the protesters, saying stuff like, "Well, you yourself were sat on the lawn in a grassroots fashion. This is against Ordinance 43A. And then it would just be a 10-hour debate in the course of which nothing would happen.
I mean, this is the thing. It's like trying to push on... You're trying to, like, pull that lever, essentially, that turns the British cop from, like, that to... Like we saw in the 2008 student protest, where it, like, you know, met TSG, like, doing coke
but
and cracking
they didn't
heads.
Factor
like,
in one thing, which is that British society can all be united by their love of vapes. And so it would end with the police and the protesters all sharing vapes together.
The vaping of the 5,000, when Jesus handed one elf bar around the crowd and everyone had a toke.
That's why the government want to ban the vapes, because they know it's the only thing that can unite people from across cultures and across classes. True.
Yeah, I remember that one Kendall Jenner ad where she like hands the cop a vape and like peace breaks out.
So there's a few more
no
things.
No reaction off that. It's almost like I'd fucked up that joke badly.
A few more things, right? A few more things, which is, you know, various people have been asked in the one political party, various people have been asked for their reactions to these things. You know, the Tory, one of the Tory reactions, again, like, you can see the official line kind of getting worked out here. The Tory reaction from Miriam Cates has been, the Blairite aspiration to send half of all young people to university has backfired spectacularly.
Yeah, all of these people should be way dumber.
Yeah, spending 3 years detached from the real world, spending someone else's money is not the best start to an adult life.
Palestine is in the real world. That's one of the places where it is.
Yes.
Like,
it's one of the realest bits, I would argue, if you really want to know how things work. I mean, it's also a pretty funny thing to say as a Tory MP, someone who has never inhabited the real world at any point.
Yeah.
You know, and
did Miriam Cates do anything before being an MP either? Like, I don't remember anything about her besides politics.
Hang up. Let's check.
Pull that up on screen.
Okay. She was a teacher for a little while and then became a full-time politician.
Okay. Cool.
She was like, these schools are overfunded. Time to join the Conservative
Party.
In
fairness, right, if you're a teacher and you're like, I hate these little shits and I want to make their lives as miserable as possible, being a Tory MP is the easily one of the best ways to do that.
Right. And now, so this is, that's one of the examples, right? Which is just, I no longer, and which is common, by the way, again, in ways that people in Britain's governing class look at the country, which is, what are some of the things that, agree with them or not, at least kind of work here as an industry? And exporting higher education is one of them. It's one of the last ones we have. And to be like, I don't like this anymore. I don't like this. We shouldn't have it.
And this is also like one of the reasons why, like, the differences between the US and the UK protests in terms of the reaction to, because in the US, it's like, there aren't really any, you know, there are some calls to be like, oh, we need to shut down Harvard or Columbia or whatever. But they're like in the minority. Like, their argument is very much like, oh, we need to like de-wokeify the Ivy League and like, you know, bring it back to its sort of glory, which is a sort of savor. Like, we still want like our kids and our grandkids to like go to these elite schools. We just want to get rid of the people who like, you know, we don't want to be there, which happen to like largely be minority kids. And which is also, you know, you can draw a line between like this kind of stuff around, like the sort of resistance towards like DEI, you know, and the sort of manufacturedness of that with the sort of...
You're so right, though. Like, there's we don't even want to do elite reproduction anymore. We just hate the kids too much.
Yeah, but in the UK, it's like, no, fuck my grandkids. I don't give a shit if they go to Oxford or not, right? I just like fucking hate them.
My woke non-binary grandchild.
Yeah. I'll never fuck my wife in case we have a child.
Yeah. We have ordered Wadham College to be rigged up with the same explosives they have at TSMC in case any one more person gets a gender. We're blowing the whole thing.
That's right.
But, right, this is the one response, which is, again, like, to be so in the culture war about it, to be so, again, hatred, to have so much hatred of like either your own children and grandchildren or like anybody who stands outside the extremely very narrow, it's a very narrow Overton window and it's very heavily policed.
I understand it's hard to get into Oxford and Cambridge.
Like, I don't want these things to exist from the right, basically. I want them to exist only as tourist attractions, as you say.
Tourist attractions and like warehouses for like the sort of Chinese upper to upper middle class.
Yes. And, you know, and
well, China needs people to run stuff. So still have to operate Oxford and Cambridge.
And it's still going to be prestigious for a while until they figure out anything else.
Yeah, when the Chinese take us over, we want the guy ruling Britain to be saying stuff like, I spent many happy years in Oxford.
And for
that reason, I will spare you.
Yeah, exactly. Things get fucked up and we get like the Durham Communist Party cadre.
Yeah.
The Durham Chinese guy. Yeah. He's got a real chip on his shoulder about the Oxford and Cambridge Chinese
guy. Just like he sort of walks in, the country's been taken over, the troops are here for your protection, it's exactly as good as Oxford and Cambridge, academically rigorous.
Our first move as Chinese overlords will be to assert the power of Docksbridge.
no, that is one sort of, you could say, almost like spasmodic reaction to people stepping out of this Overton window in public.
Yeah.
One of the other ones, again, this is David Lammy being interviewed about, you know, progressive realism, says, there's a difference between peaceful protest of the kind Mandela would have advocated.
I mean,
didn't he used to blow stuff up?
Yeah, he did. He did, yeah.
No, don't think so. I checked.
Uh-huh.
I checked the things people think without really thinking about them yeah. list.
I checked the Mandela effect.
Yes, I checked. It's possible Mandela effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's like, oh yeah, it was Gandhi, and Gandhi ended British rule in India by, you know, being like
being
hungry
nice,
and
being nice
and
yeah.
being nice and wearing the thing
by
and,
having crazy drip. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. There was nobody else who was like also practicing any other kind of resistance at any time. Same thing with Mandela, by the way. There was no like campaigns to say starve apartheid South Africa of investment.
No.
You know, it was just Mandela went to jail really well.
The thing is, right, the way this works is you get oppressed for long enough, you unlock the guy who like invents being nice, and then when you do, the whole thing like falls
yeah,
apart.
Yeah, it's like a blue shell in Mario Kart. It's like you have to be at the back for a while and then you get it. And then, you know, that works. To see that again brought back up as though the only, again, we know that the opinion of the Labour Party is the only thing you should do is nothing, mm-hmm. right? Because you should let us do the stuff, and what we're going to do is very safely live in that little window.
Yeah.
You know, he says,
which is getting less and less realistic a place to live in, by the way.
There's
it's becoming more of an arrow slit.
Yes.
There's a difference between the kind of peaceful protest of the kind that Mandela would have advocated and violence and rioting. And I would also argue there's a big fucking difference between violence and rioting and what's going on at UK universities right now. Unless between the time we record this and the time we release it, a bunch of like people who got radicalized on Facebook or in a newspaper comment section just go in with a cricket bat or a car and start busting heads.
Yeah, be very, I'll lay down a marker here and say that if there is violence and rioting, it's not going to be the students starting it.
Indeed.
Luckily, the Oxford and Cambridge students will probably have a cricket bat with which to defend themselves. So
I'm outraged at what is happening to ordinary folk in Sudan and Yemen and in Haiti. And again, it's like, yeah, I'm outraged at what's happening to ordinary folk in Yemen as well. Who the fuck's doing that?
Don't know. Haven't checked.
I like that David Lammy's trying to do like he cares about some hipster issues that no one's talking about, and that's his tactic to be like, no one's talking about Haiti. Okay, let's talk about Haiti.
But also,
what are we doing about that?
It's like, hey, hang on a second. Who's supplying the planes that are? And also, these same people often have been protesting against like. What we've been fucking doing to Yemen?
Mm-hmm. Also, it's so dumb to be like, thinking it's a gotcha that like people are focused on one thing right now. People can only think about one thing at a time.
And it's the thing we're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No one gets up in the morning and is like, right, I'm going to compile a list of every injustice in the world and go through them one by one. That's not how brains work.
Mm. It's a sort of INTJ comprehending everything.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point to make where it's just like, you know, the real, like when, you know, to go back to electoral politics just for a little bit, like the real reverence that like sometimes these politicians have over like, you know, the ordinary voter, like, you know, they don't care about what happens in Westminster. They don't care about global issues. They just want their bins collected, right? That's the only thing they think about. They just think about their bins. They just think about their bins. No one's telling them that like, oh, you should also think about like the potholes or something as well. They're like, no, we respect that you only think about the bins and we will do everything in our power to make sure that like your bins are sort of picked up on time. Whether they do it is a different question, obviously, but it is interesting to kind of like berate, or it's very telling that like, you know, you'll sort of like berate one group of people for being like, oh, you're commenting on like all these atrocities that you see on your phone all the time because like so much like horrific stuff is happening. But like, even if you try to
avoid
Lewis
Saunderson.
Yeah, like even, you know, but actually like you shouldn't talk about the like sort of decapitated bodies you sort of see on social media. Like, even if you're like not searching for it, you should be thinking, like, you should just be thinking about Haiti and the bins.
Haiti and the bins is an indie band.
You should be thinking about issues that are so local to you that they are basically administrative questions.
Yeah.
Or you should be thinking about international issues that we have not as much to do with, let's say. Lammy goes on. I say gently to those who concentrate singly on a very ancient and terrible war. A war where one of the sides goes back to being an organization, entity in the area since as long as 1987.
Yeah, like an ancient war that goes back to October.
Yeah, an ancient and terrible war that is taking place in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and but let us not crowd out a lot of people suffering in our world today and underlying that the US and UK have to stand firm on so many fronts today.
No, fuck you, eat shit. I will continue to think about this primarily.
Yeah. And again, what they always want to do, this is people like Lammy, is they want to say, oh, you don't understand, you're wrong, or you also, oh, it's confusing, it's ancient, and it's too puzzling for my head. Oh, I can't think of it. Ah, no, it is simple, which is if you're a student and you have a university that's invested in fucking Elbit or whatever, then you have a some of your student fees and some of your activity is going to facilitate crimes against humanity in Gaza right now.
Yeah, is your university more likely to be invested in Israel or Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, the gang warlord currently destabilizing Haiti? Just a quick guess, you know?
And weirdly, the University of Reading long on Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier.
Yeah.
That guy gets results, okay? He has funded our entire rowing program.
One of those weird quirks where, like, Oxford owns a bunch of, like, Haitian gang shares.
Yeah. Oxford is technically the world's biggest supplier of sawn-off shotguns.
Yeah. So, right. So, at the end of the day, it's a simple yes-no question that the hand-wringing and the references to, like, oh, well, it's from, like, 3 BC. You'll never understand it. Mm. No, it's a simple question. Are you facilitating this? Yes, no, you shouldn't be.
Yeah, you can do concrete questions like, where are the money and the arms going? Yeah. Where are they coming from and who's paying for
and,
them?
And, you know, I mean, I'll sort of jump across the pond for a sec back to the U.S. where, you know, again, as I sort of, I try to follow, like, AI conferences. Mm-hmm. I try to look at who's talking at them, what are they saying, and there's one recently where Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, and Mark Milley, former general, basically spoke at this, like, it's the AI for Strategic Competitiveness Summit, the kind of, like,
all of this shit is so funny to me, like Palantir getting like airstrikes done on Kanban boards and all that kind of shit.
Well, this is essentially, right, they say, look, they speak plainly. Right. They say what they think, which is that this is a kind of Vietnam moment for defense.
Is that good?
Well, kind of, is it? So let's say attitudinally among, like, the future generation of American elites. Now, we know, like, the previous Vietnam moment certainly didn't end American empire. Far from it.
Yeah. John Kerry became Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Like
what it did do, however, was it took quite a while for ordinary Americans to be on board with putting a soldier in another country, right? Mm. It certainly damaged its reputation. So what Alex Karp says, if this quote-unquote argument is lost, right, the idea that the argument being put forward by the student protesters, which is, this is bad, we should have nothing to do with it, we should have nothing to do with this country, why do we keep propping it up, and so on. If this argument is lost, then legitimacy of the U.S. empire is gone. He says, if we lose the intellectual battle here, we will not be able to employ any army in the West ever again, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is
there's
bullshit.
Chinese elites at Durham right now who would love for that to happen. You know.
But it's absolute bullshit is the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, slippery slope bullshit. It's like, listen, if there's actual threats to the West, people are quite capable of seeing them and responding to them. And, like, the biggest roadblock to fighting them turns out to be the right again, as with Ukraine.
But also it feels as though they're like, well, and I think Ukraine is a very pressing thing to bring up in the sense that, like, they're failing to learn the lessons of what other people are up to. Mm. Like, Putin massively overplayed his hand by invading Ukraine. And as then he was much more influential before. He had much more sway on the global stage before. And then the US could have just told Israel to knock it off like 6 months ago. Mm. Like, they could have just quietly, without publicly disavowing them or anything, just quietly stopped this from turning into the huge clusterfuck that it is. But they chose not to for, like, ? And now they're stuck in this situation where they either keep having to, like, doubling and tripling down on, like, the worst foreign policy mistake of the last decade, or they have to, like, completely disavow this, like, ally that's very, like, politically important to them or whatever. And it's like, you didn't need to get into this situation.
Well, it's I suppose when you go back to, no, you didn't, but also you did, because the whole point of, and especially as we've talked about on this show, the point of empire is to extend and crush and push and never back down.
Mm.
And the problem is, right, and I think why Karp and Milley are talking about student protesters in such harsh, in such sort of, let's say, extreme terms, is A, they represent a political tendency that wants to carpet bomb every university, send all, like, the pointy-headed professors back to the land or whatever.
Which is very funny, because if you look at Mark Milley, you can find a lot of cartoons of people making him woke because he, like, isn't transphobic or whatever.
Right, that's one tendency, but also I think there is a sense that there is, and again, this is what Miriam Cates, I think, is reaching for as well, and David Lammy is kind of wishing away, which is that we elite reproduction, requires these organizations. It doesn't require these organizations to teach you anything, really. It requires these organizations to credential you and give you the network that you're going to be invested in being an elite, managing whatever this whole thing is.
Yeah, and because it's going to get more brutal, you're going to have to come out of these elite institutions willing to kill, right? Because like it's going to be a hotter world. It's going to be a more unstable, more violent world. And like the kind of imagined guarantees of security are such that, no, you need these people to be on side, that you need them to be on the team of Empire, and maybe they're not.
And so David Lammy is saying, I wish that they were just different.
Yeah.
Miriam Cates is saying, universities are not the place. Again, she's not smart enough to realize it, but she's saying, universities are not the place to be training our incoming class of elites. And then Karp and Millie, I think, are saying it a little more clearly, which is that this incoming class of elites, we cannot depend on not all of them. Mm. Many of them will still very eagerly go be like Raytheon executives.
Yeah, and that's why we have to automate so much and put as much as we can in the hands of the careerists and far-right freak shows.
But huge swaths of those people that, they don't care about them individually, but those people are like opposed to the project that they are trying to carve into eternity, which is the unquestioned the unquestioned river of blood that is spilled in the name of a united front.
I am trying to build a statue of the great King Ozymandias, and these woke little shits seem to think that it won't even last. In some ways, doing this has made me feel more optimistic than I have in a while, just because like it is patently obvious that people are like losing control of this,
And
Why would these legs be trunkless? They're vast. They can easily support a trunk.
And so like I don't want to say like, oh yeah, I'm dumb. I'm not saying, oh, the kids are all right, etc.
I kind of am a bit.
But it seems as though there is at least a crisis of elite reproduction that it seems, or at least these people think there is, that they don't think they know how to respond to.
Yes.
And I always like seeing these people
squirm.
Think they don't know how to respond to something.
Yes.
And you can even see it, I mean, just sticking in the US for a second as well, you can even see it with Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful. And also you can see this is a man who does not understand AI when he gave an interview about protesters at American universities saying, there's plenty of consequences for all these people. Even an image that far away, AI can generate by the way the body moves.
What?
Yeah, Kevin O'Leary is, if you want to get work for Kevin O'Leary, you're going to have to do like some kind of a body movement AI assessment so that he can see if you were ever at a protest.
I enter the Columbia encampment and I walk without rhythm.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to sand walk right into one of Mr. Wonderful's companies and he cannot stop me.
He's not going to be able to tell. It's also just, it's very funny to do this thing just like, oh, look at the students protesting foreign policy. The universities have gone irredeemably woke. And I'm like, sorry, do you think that students doing like little encampments to protest foreign policy is some kind of new or shocking thing? It's like the thing that canonically students have always done.
Yeah, yeah. And like elites have survived this before, as with Vietnam. Yeah. The stuff they're bitching about, like,
famously, it doesn't really work.
It went fine. American Empire is still there. Mm. Also, who taught you how to tie a kefir like that? Just seemed the right way.
So he says,
that's Mr. Wonderful is actually, he's fighting against it so hard.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So he says, I can't believe the stuff I find in background checks now. These people are screwed. He added that due to the use of high-quality cameras to record footage of protests that are posted on social media, employers may be able to find evidence of a person participating in that behavior. Every single image, even at night now, goes into an AI generator and will tell you who that individual is. I hire people. I have lots of companies. I've hired thousands of people. Within weeks, I'm going to be able, when we're doing your background check, I'm going to find where you were because it's going to be out there on the dark web.
I'm just thinking about my knowledge of history and I'm putting like both hands to my temples, Professor X style, and going, ooh, please create a class of unemployable, like would have been elites who are very highly educated and organized. Please do that. I am begging you, please do that.
Yeah, this goes back to like, I don't know how necessarily we respond to the crisis of elite reproduction. The only problem is that we've sort of, one thing we talked about in the last episode, we talked about the universities was we've largely, that's yesteryear's sort of place where elites get reproduced. Yeah. It's sort of, we wonder how many of them do you need, to run your empire? Yeah, you know, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of moved upwards, right? Like, university is preschool now, and the real place of elite reproduction is the graduate scheme.
It all, yeah, I mean, I was going to say, it also strikes me as kind of stupid that they would, like, immediately dismiss people who were sort of at these encampments. Because if I was a recruiter, and I was just like, well, you know, so you sort of, like, set up your own, like, little enterprising zone, like, you know, you're being very resourceful, you know, you're sort of, like, providing lots of kind of resource, you're providing, you know, meals, resources, you know, makeshift infrastructure on the, or like using like, you know, very like low cost materials.
Guy who goes to the encampment because it's good for his CV.
you can get t-shirts printed very quickly. If I was a recruiter, I'd just be like, you know, the way that I would sort of like break it up wouldn't be through like violence. It would be like, hey, do you think that your skills would be better suited at McKinsey?
Mm. Yeah. You've started your very own swin zone here. Yeah. But what about entering the swin zone of life?
And of course, the other reaction from the UK papers has been to start identifying just members of the protest by name in the paper because they like left some digital garbage in the wake of like.
Please don't create a class of unemployable, shiftless future revolutionaries.
This encampment participant has a Mont Blanc pen that they were given as a graduation present, which means that they're very out of touch with the biro writing majority.
Well, they're in the pocket of the Swiss. We're getting into like 19th century style news. It's some kind of Swiss insurrectionist. Yeah.
Anyway, that's all we have time for today for this episode. Yeah. So I want to thank you for listening to TF. Remind you that we have a live show that is almost sold out.
Yeah, it's getting close to sold out. People are hungry for Trust really, content.
They want to know what happens in the 9 years and 11 months we have to save the West.
In Liz we trust.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got 9 years and 11 months of Western hegemony left.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to be reading all about that in London on the 29th of May. The ticket links, as ever, are going to be in the
it's
description.
It's going to be Ash Nishkumar, the Chinese elite who went to Durham. It's going to be great.
And we are going to see you there. Mm. And also, we will see you on the bonus episode, which this week is we are going to be talking about the strange economy of Europe and why it generates so many guys with frequent recurrent guest Rob Smith.
So, I love a bit of Rob Smith.
So
all people are calling him the Kay Wiggins of the London office. So if you are in Berlin, I have a show on the 16th of May. Please come to that. I'd need to sell tickets to that.
I will also be in Berlin.
Yeah, but you can't see him.
No.
He will go unseen.
I will be in Berlin from the following day.
Predominantly in black.
Pursuing my own social agenda, hanging out with my girlfriend and our friends who are there. I will not be performing anything.
Me, in this case.
Well, and Sean. Shouts out to Sean. You know, I will not be performing anything. I will not be selling tickets to anything.
Yeah.
And you can't come see me unless you just walk past me in the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Don't say anything.
No.
I also have a bunch of
you can say hi.
Work in progress shows and stuff all over the UK. mylevels.co.uk/live-shows for all of that.
Nice.
Sick.
Perfect. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.